I'm John Batchelor. Michael Yon. That is locals.com/Michael Yon. Is in Vilnius, Lithuania. He's been there for 48 hours to inspect the border where there's trouble, but also to explore Lithuanian history, recent history. For most of the 20th century, Lithuania, along with its neighbors, Latvia to the north and Estonia to the north, were under the boot of the Soviet creature and crushed by the Soviet creature since the revolution in the early part of the 20th century. Resentful, Lithuania is keen to emphasize that it is an independent republic, was before the Soviets showed up, is now after the Soviets have become the Russians, threatening again all along the frontier. Lithuania, if you go to your map, is between Belarus, which is a Russian client, and Kaliningrad, which is a Russian enclave on the Baltic Sea, heavily armed enclave. Lithuania is right in between. Michael is in the capital city, Vilnius, which is right in between those two Russian-armed Russian-armed camps. To the southwest of Michael is a gap that flows from Lithuania into Poland. That gap and where Michael is now are the imagined conflict zone if and when the Russian Federation and NATO tangle, to be determined. Michael, a very good evening to you. Your comments yesterday reminded me that Lithuania has a rich history, and you came across this history when you met a Lithuanian soldier in Afghanistan. You have spent the last 24 hours learning about Lithuanian history. What have you learned about its opinion of itself? And also, I call upon you to remember the first Cold War when you were trained to fight the Soviets. Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening from Vilnius. I'm here only one block away from the KGB Museum, actually. So I'm right where it all happened in the old days. Of course, after World War II, that's when they say the war really started with the Soviets for the Lithuanians. They began a fierce resistance and with a group called the Forest Brothers. They were living out in the forest for some years, fighting hard. And so the Lithuanians are very proud of that. In fact, the Baltic resistance, if you remember during my time in Hong Kong, before they kicked me out last year, the Hong Kongers often would reverberate what happened in the Baltic states, standing up, especially Lithuania, with their human chains across Hong Kong. They were doing the same that they saw that especially Lithuania do here in the Baltic states. So, I mean, they've really inspired huge amounts of people. Of course, Poland and Lithuania in particular were fierce resistance against the Soviets for many years. And that's where, when I was at Green Beret, the two A teams that I was on were both targeted towards Poland. That's why I went to two language schools. One was the defense language school for German. Then I went to another lesser school for Polish. And our mission was to parachute into Poland near a place called, this was very secretive at the time, but those days are over. I can talk about it. But we were to parachute not far from here, not far from where I'm at now, near a town in Poland called Białystok, near the Belarus border, because the train gauges coming in, the railroad tracks coming in from the Soviet Union are a different width than the ones in West Europe. And so when they're bringing in their tanks and their other armored vehicles and rockets and whatnot on the trains, they have to change. There's a transloading station where you take it from the trains of one width on the tracks of one width, and you transload the containers and the armor over to other trains. And so that was a very serious weak point for the Soviets. And so our job was to parachute in there and do really bad things. And, of course, it was a one-way mission. We never did it, or you would have heard about it, because it would have been World War III. But I'm very familiar with this area because of that. And as you said in the introduction, this corridor where I'm at now was one of the second echelon corridors where Soviet forces would have been coming down on trains through Belarus and through actually through here, Lithuania as well. And they would have been going to Białystok area to that transloading station where we would have been attacking them. And, of course, that's why. And I lived in Poland for 2 years after I was out of the army. So I became very familiar with this area. Then later, in the Afghan war, when I was in Afghanistan, I was in Zabul province, and I was out with some U.S. Green Berets and talking about Lithuanian Special Operations Forces, LIFSOF, they call them, Lithuanian Special Operations Forces, were in Zabul province, and I came across, you know, them out there and wrote about them, and it became big news here in Lithuania. And one thing led to another. The Lithuanians then invited me out with their army in a place called Hor province, Afghanistan, and we got to know each other, right? So I was with them in the Afghan war, and then for years we've been in contact, and now we see that Belarus is flooding migrants through Lithuania over into the EU, into the European Union, because Lithuania is part of the European Union. So once you get into Lithuania, you might as well be in, you know, Germany. And so so I dived into some of my old Lithuanian army contacts and flew up here from Morocco a few days ago and have been out here doing research ever since. And so that's what I'm doing here. We're watching Belarus be belligerent again. Lukashenko, the dictator, they say he's the last dictator of Europe, but I'm sure he won't be the last. But at this point, he's the last at the moment. And he's threatened the EU to flood the EU with radioactive material and migrants. He's making good on the migrants, and that's why I'm here.
Let's recover the Cold War, because it's not very far from the thinking at NATO now. It's called the Suwalki Gap. There's a town in Poland called Suwalki. And Michael is pointing to the geography that favors the Russians, then called the Soviets in the 20th century, now called the Russian Federation, to flow into the Suwalki Gap and into Poland. They need to change trains for their heavy equipment. Michael's telling us that the Pentagon planned in the late 20th century. These are the dark days of the Cold War, when Brezhnev was dead and a series of aged and extremely hostile premiers and general secretaries took over the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union is described today as a gas station with an army. In those days, it was a very powerful entity. It wasn't trading with the West. It was occupying vast canvas, and it had enormous numbers of tanks, saying that sometimes quantity is quality. The idea was to flood into Poland and keep going right to Berlin and Paris. That was the idea. Michael's unit, he's now telling us, was to drop into the flank of the Russian invasion. And do what, Michael? What was day two on the jump?
Well, whether or not when we would have actually gone in there is unknown to me, and I think it was unknown to our command at the time as well. But we had planned to parachute in by low level outside of Bialystok. Again, this was very secretive at the time. I can talk about it now without going to jail, but at the time, you know, that's why. When the radioactive spill happened, when the reactor went wrong in what was it, 86, we had just parachuted into Luxembourg as training to parachute into Poland, and we got flash message that, you know, don't drink the water. We were back in Luxembourg, of course, and so what were we going to do? We were going to parachute in here at nighttime, parachute into a forested area near the railway, and watch for certain sorts of equipment. We became experts. If you showed me, you could throw a big, you know, canvas over a tank, and I could tell you what kind of tank it was, what kind of radio, if it was a command tank, if it was outfitted for chemical weapons, I could tell you everything about that. Artillery pieces, rockets, radars, Op 4 ID, opposing forces identification was something we trained immensely to do. And if we saw certain equipment, we were to attack it immediately and kill the crews and try to get away, of course. Others were just to call it back very occasionally. We wouldn't do much radio communications because we would be DF'd, direction found, and they would hit us with artillery or come in and, you know, paratroop in on and get us. Of course, there would only be 12 of us, and that was a problem. For instance, when we parachuted in, if somebody was hurt, there was not going to be medevac. It was not like Iraq or Afghanistan where you can call helicopters and be out in an hour or two, or 30 minutes. I mean, if you get hurt, if you break your leg on parachuting in, you're not going to make it, period. And so this was a very serious mission, a kamikaze type mission. And there was teams that were going to do this throughout different areas of Poland. Of course, we didn't know where the other teams were, and they didn't know where we would be going. and Czechoslovakia as well, and to try to cause as much havoc as we could, link up with Polish resistance. Of course, Polish hated the Soviets, so we were ordered, you know, never, of course, fire on the Polish. Even if they're firing at you, try to let them know that you're Americans, and they'll probably take you in because that's your only way out. There was not going to be any resupply. We were not going to get parachute resupply. We were going to have to link up with Polish resistance to fight the war.
Do the Lithuanian soldiers know about this history? Know about how they were the invasion corridor for the Soviets?
They knew they were the invasion corridor, but I talked with a Lithuanian officer today. Of course, he said after World War II, they had hoped that Americans would come in for years, and we never did. We didn't at all, actually. Of course, we did QR Helpful CIA operation years and years later in the 80s, and QR Helpful was part of a larger strategy to undermine the Soviet Union that included SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative, the Saudis dropped oil prices, of course, and then we worked to pin the Soviets over in Afghanistan. When they invaded Afghanistan, we started supplying, you know, the Mujahideen through Pakistan and also in Afghanistan. And the Saudis got involved. A lot of people don't realize that the Chinese were actually involved somewhat to a smaller degree. And so all these different things that we were doing, Strategic Defense Initiative, QR Helpful, the CIA operation, of course, Special Forces and SEALs planning to parachute into different parts of the East Bloc to do bad things. The Soviets trying to react to that, trying to build up their military while the oil prices were depressed by the Saudis. Eventually, you know, we went at them with like an octopus on acid, I say, you know, and they collapsed. And so the next thing you know, I had a business in Poland because the Berlin Wall fell. And the next thing you know, people like me that had studied Poland and the East Bloc in detail, we were running all over the East Bloc. And it was quite interesting.
Michael, do you recall the name of the operation that would have parachuted you into Bialystok?
It was Op plan, I don't remember. It was strange, like 2404, so I don't remember. It was, you probably find it with Freedom. In fact, I called one of my teammates last night, and I asked him if he could remember what it was, because it wasn't like Operation Smack Him in the Head. It was something like Op Plan 4404 or something like that.
How many teams there were to be dropped into the Suwalki Gap? You couldn't have been the only one.
We wouldn't have been the only one, but it wasn't only there. Near Bialystok, there's a transloading station, as I mentioned before, where the trains have to change, and so you have to. And so there was also places like that down near, you know, Czechoslovakia and other places, and there were other targets. Now, keep in mind, everything's compartmentalized, so I don't know exactly what the other teams are going to do, and we didn't talk to each other about it because, you know, if one team gets captured, which is a very high chance, you didn't want people saying where the other teams are. We wouldn't even know. I would have no idea.
And this is the 1980s, Ronald Reagan's administration, or was it the 70s?
80s. 1980s. That's why I went to Defense Language Institute. That's why I got to be one of the youngest Green Berets, because when Reagan came in, the people that could make it through selection, they were allowing us to go right through, and very few of us made it. I was one of them. One of my friends that I went to high school with, Scott Helvenston, was the youngest Navy SEAL ever, and it was all because of the Reagan buildup. In fact, he ended up being killed. Scott was killed in Iraq later, and he worked for Blackwater in Fallujah. So that was that generation where young people like us, we got to fast track things in almost like a dreamland. I mean, that first 2 years, I came into the Army, went through all that training, made it through without any problems, went straight to Defense Languages Institute, got straight on an A-team and started training to parachute into Poland. It was like very strange.
Michael Jahn, recalling the 20th century, the Cold War, the first Cold War, there are remarks by the Biden administration that suggest we're on the eve of, if not already started, with the second Cold War. The NATO forces move in and out of the Baltic states, 1,000 of them, we're told. At the same time, the NATO forces routinely fly along the Russian frontier and the Belarus frontier. So what Michael's reporting about the Belarus frontier is fresh information. NATO headquarters has that information. What are they doing about it? When we come back, we're going to recover what Michael saw along the Lithuanian-Belarus border and what he's seen in Vilnius. Are the refugees in Vilnius? Are they in the town square? They are where the way they are in other parts of the Great Migration. I'm John Batchelor.